KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunch Box, located 620 Southwest 9th Avenue in Portland, a small casual spot for counter-served breakfast, burgers, and sandwiches in a cafe environment. Lunch was provided by Musubi, located 2134 Southeast Division Street, Portland's takeout spot for Hawaiian sushi rice snacks filled with house-made spam and other delicacies. Dinner was provided by Mississippi Pizza, located 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. Music, trivia, and other all-ages events are featured at this pizzeria with lounge. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Starlit Night for the Refugees, Saturday, September 30th at Ceremon House in Portland. Starlit Night for the Refugees is a concert featuring the talents of some of Portland's most renowned musical stars, Tom Grant, Nancy Curtin, and Laura Kennard. The concert will benefit the RR Group project in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, a safe house for refugees where people can get food, clothing, a bed to sleep in, and free calls home to their families. Again, that's Starlit Night for the Refugees, Saturday, September 30th at 7 p.m. at Ceremon House in Portland, 5131 Northeast 23rd Avenue. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey, that sounded professional, that version. It was homegrown by two of our musicians, Joe and Clayton. Hi, folks. It's a pleasure and responsibility to tell you, yes, we are moles in the ground. In some ways, desecrated that ground. In many places, a ruined, toxified country and earth as to the environment and its politics, but also a sacred ground hallowed from the centuries of struggle. And now that struggle continues, and more intensely now in the time of Trump. Today, the old mole brings you three major struggles in our time. If we keep up the flight, we can, in fact, turn them in our favor. For one, today we discuss sanctuary cities and the struggle to protect workers who came to this country without documents. Also today, Buy America and economic nationalism. Is it good for the working class? What, in fact, do the great ordinary folks of this country, ordinary folks, of course, of an extraordinary species, what kind of overall economic policy would be good for them? First today, though, we discuss energy, solutions to the climate crisis. Last week, we played part one of an interview with Jessica Tovar. She's an organizer with the California Local Clean Energy Alliance. We discussed that many counties in California, pursuant to California law, they're taking over the electric power utilities, replacing the big corporate utilities. And in fact, those counties and cities are producing sun and wind energy and supplying it to people at much lower cost to ratepayers than the corporate monopolies. We should note that several other states, like California, have what's called community choice aggregation laws, but not Oregon, whose legislators and city councils are very highly influenced one could say, in the pocket of Pacific Power and PGE. In part two today of the Tovar interview, we discuss how California's corporate utilities are spending now hundreds of billions of dollars of customer money trying to regain their monopoly. So far, they've been defeated, however, by California's very militant and active clean energy movements. This story and many others on energy democracy is told in the book. It's titled Energy Democracy. Today it's a premium. We give it to you free as a premium for becoming a member or renewing membership in this week's KBOO membership drive. More on the book and KBOO later. First, here's Jessica Tovar on protecting California's community local energy system from the corporados who want to regain control and are spending millions to do it. Jessica Tovar, we've been talking about the immense benefits of community choice aggregation and community. That's the name of the program for all of California, and particularly the way Alameda County is implementing it and building out on the local level. The big utilities of California, what California Edison and PG&E and maybe a few others, the tremendous operations with huge financing, big world corporations the banks all over the world finance them, and they're an enormous capital asset. They're now going to run the distribution system and charge for it and make a little bit of money in comparison to what they used to make. How did they ever lose?
That's a good question. With PG&E here in the East Bay area, they're looking at different ways to actually tax us for starting community choice energy programs. An example of that is that they do charge an exit fee. So if you are starting a community choice energy program, PG&E is pretty much charging a fee for their loss. And us as ratepayers, we have to pay into that. Our programs, our community choice energy programs, have to pay an exit fee. And since they do still own the grid, they're also charging transmission access charges. And so these different types of fees that these investor-owned utilities charge, we actually have to fight as well. So Local Clean Energy Alliance, along with other groups in the state of California, have actually established a statewide entity to kind of be on guard when it comes to this kind of policy. I call it the CASE, joking around, but it's California Alliance for Community Energy, and so that's the statewide body. So yeah, that is an issue, and as you can imagine, PG&E was never happy with community choice energy. As a matter of fact, recent history shows that they have, through their union, fought community choice at the statewide level and have fought also at some degree in the local level. For us, it's been very important to galvanize, like I said, the various community stakeholders, including unions, to address this issue and really educate and support community choice energy. And one of the important things I think that we did is bring different unions together, including some of the unions that were not friendly traditionally to community choice energy, but actually have discussions with them about how this could be a huge jobs creator in the community. So that is one of the things that a lot of the unions see in addition to addressing the issues of climate change and environmental justice in the community.
The unions were really hostile, the IBEW workers within PG&E. They were afraid for their jobs, and they were very hostile. And they supported, along with, of course, PG&E, this. What they did is they put a referendum, an initiative on the California ballot that would essentially have the impact of killing off what you're trying to do, of stopping community choice aggregation by making it far more expensive, as they're trying to do still in other ways. But it's still a big loss to them and a big loss to the people who finance them. They're going to take a bath in terms of gross profits and size at some level. In any event, the union spent like $30 million, which at that time was a lot of money for an initiative. Right. The people who were supporting community energy had less than $500,000. Tell us what happened in that struggle.
Sure. So what you're referring to is the California Assembly Bill 2145, and I forget what they called it, but yeah, it pretty much was an attack against community choice energy at the statewide level, and it was very much carried by IBEW 1245, which is the union that represents PG&E. So again, a huge fight, and this is what's really important to us, is really having huge alliances. We have an alliance at the local level called the East Bay Clean Power Alliance. We have a statewide alliance, the California Alliance for Community Energy. So really getting, again, a lot of the different stakeholders at the statewide level and organizing together to fight this huge attack on community choice energy. You have to understand there is a lot of other activists, advocates for community choice energy throughout the state of California who have been trying to get their local electeds to take on community choice. So working with these different advocates throughout the state, we were very fortunate to beat AB 2145 and actually preserve that policy to begin starting community choice energy programs in the different cities and counties that make up California. And that, again, Local Clean Energy Alliance can't do it alone, so it's very important for us to band together with all the different environmental, climate justice, social justice groups, and even other unions who support community choice energy has been very, very instrumental in winning that fight.
Jessica Tovar, tell us about the efforts that were made by the Local Clean Energy Alliance and many others to bring the unions on board, particularly, of course, the IBEW, that was the union for PG&E workers.
Well, it definitely took years of organizing and building relationships with different community groups, specifically different unions. And one thing that's been really key is building relationships with a lot of other unions was very important. A lot of unions see the importance of fighting climate change, specifically after Hurricane Sandy that hit New York. A lot of unions came together to address these issues because it affects their union members, their communities, and it affects their jobs. If there's huge flooding and storms, people are out of work and people are out of a home. So Hurricane Sandy definitely brought together or really hit home for a lot of union folks. And here in the East Bay area, we worked with a lot of different groups, specifically the California Nurses Association, AFSCME, SEIU. And at the same time, a lot of these groups came together and started their own kind of climate and environmental justice caucus. So already doing that education with union members. So it was really exciting for people to be able to come together on an issue that can actually address solutions. So a lot of those unions really sat with us, including IBEW 1245 that represents PG&E, and that union peer pressure enabled us to get a unity platform that we fought for at the local level with the local supervisors to get that commitment for the local development and the community in the governance of the program. The unions were able to see, yeah, this is very beneficial to our membership, to our unions, and creating jobs. I mean, these electrical unions are going to be hiring and getting a lot of these project labor agreements out of this program. And so seeing that there's so much opportunity and benefit, they actually agreed to work with us to fight to get that commitment.
Is that true of all of the building trades, like the carpenters? There will be not only electricians, but the plumbers, the carpenters, the concrete people, all of those, the unions that represent them.
It actually was the entire Alameda Labor Council that signed off on this unity clause. So under that labor council is the building trades, is the different electrician unions, is all the unions pretty much in Alameda County. So once we got that labor council to sign on, all those unions automatically are involved.
Well, you have a great labor council in Alameda County, don't you?
Well, I have to say, it's every step along the way is a struggle. It didn't end right there. We're still working and trying to work together. So we're definitely at a phase now where we're trying to bring everybody back to the table so that we can have a more unified voice. And that doesn't happen without organizing. So.
Hi, folks. We're interrupting this interview with Jessica Tovar. We'll be back shortly. We have something vital to talk to you about, which is KABU, this wonderful radio station, the breath of life in this city. We're KABU, we're independent, we're critical. We depend almost exclusively on our listeners to stay alive and telling truth to power. KABU, of course, is critical of this country's failure to respond to the scientific consensus that climate change will destroy us all if we don't take a wide range of necessary steps to stop global warming. KABU is also visionary and positive. We discuss all the technologies, all of the practices now operating successfully, which have greatly expanded. If the country mobilized to run on sun and wind energy, it could, in the next 10 years, if we democratize energy, we could succeed and provide models and resources for the planet. That's what they're trying to do in Alameda County, and we should be doing in Oregon. In any event, we depend on you to bring those messages out, to become members, to support independent community radio. And for people who become new members or renew or send a nice gift, we'll mail you the book, Energy Democracy. So, like Jessica Tovar and so many in California, not enough in Oregon, we show the great dangers of global warming, that in time, it won't be very much time, the heating could cook us all. Friend Linda.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Tell our listeners how they can get involved with KABU, contribute to this wonderful station, come down and visit us, become a radio activist.
Well, it's really easy to do. The simplest way right now is go to 877-500-5266. Call us. The phones have been ringing off the hook this morning. It's been really gratifying. In fact, the drive itself is on track to, you know, to meet goal. But it only stays on track as the phones continue to ring. So we're asking you to call us right now. I'm suggesting the $10 a month level. That seems to be the level that most people are feeling they can do. That's $120 a month. You can certainly get this book for that and make a huge difference with KBOO radio so that you can spread the news and the public affairs you hear here around the country, as a matter of fact, because you can listen to KBOO.FM from anywhere, and you can become a member right there. Anybody who is listening that way can see the red band or at the top of their page that says donate. Please do click on that. I want to thank Sue, who's a renewing member from Northeast Portland. She rode her bike in this morning and contributed, and you can do that too. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue right here off Burnside. Also, Jesse, a renewing member from Southeast Portland. Gary, a renewing member from Vancouver. Yay, Vancouver's in the house. George, a renewing member from Seattle. So Washington is definitely coming in. And Philip is a renewing member from Southeast Portland. And then there's a new member from the Mackenzie Bridge. That is spectacular. Those are the people who've been calling in this morning. You can join them right now at 877-500-5266. You know, show your support for this incredible magazine show. This is one of my favorite shows. They put it on every week. There's about 10 of them in a collective who do this together. You get to hear in-depth interviews and issues that you may not, you're only getting to skim the surface of out there. They bring you great authors. Show your support for that programming. Keep the ball rolling here at KBOO. We have a $700 goal for this hour, so please fill that goal for us. Call right now at $10 a month. That's $120 a year. You can get the great book, Energy Democracy, and actually you can pledge just $40 and get Energy Democracy, and that's to enable those people who are not able to pledge greater to be a participant. So $40 is that basic membership, and you can get this book for that membership. We're offering that to you today, Energy Democracy, Advancing Equity and Clean Energy Solutions. And now back to the programming.
Thanks, Linda. Next, we're going to go back to Jessica Tovar discussing the California movement for local democratically run sun and wind energy. If every county in this country, or if in fact 50% of the counties in the big cities, including Portland, took up that program and began supplying clean energy and working on their transit systems and their food systems, we could, in fact, stop global warming and the greenhouse gas concentrations. quickly enough to, in fact, save the planet. We really do have all the technology. What we need is the political will. KBOO tries to provide it. Jessica Tovar is doing a wonderful job in California building up their community energy program. Let's return to the, Patricia, let's return to the interview. And it seems to me it's a possibility that once community energy gets started and you have your local community choice aggregation agency and the various communities involved and the unions and others involved, and seeing solar panels sprouting up and other forms and people being involved in creating their own energy, neighborhoods, schools, churches, all sorts of people actually are now erecting solar panels in anticipation. Once that happens, could create a culture of energy conservation. If you use a lot less energy, you save a tremendous amount of money that would go into just building energy facilities, even if they're local. And energy conservation seems to me really important, as well as like support for electrified mass transit, electric automobiles, all of the building insulation and building standards. All of those things are part of at least dealing with climate change and reducing the greenhouse gas emissions. Do you see that happening in Alameda County? Is community choice aggregation and the progress you're making also leading to strengthening, let's say, the public transportation efforts and the electrification of transport efforts? There's all of these things going on. Building codes.
Yes, exactly. So pretty much within community choice energy, in addition to those clean energy jobs, there's opportunities for energy efficiency jobs, for example. And as you had mentioned earlier in terms of conservation, we would be definitely using a lot less energy or actually using cleaner energy locally. And one of the things we do want to see is an emphasis in demand reduction, or that's the fancy term for conservation, right? People actually addressing using less during peak hours. So there is an opportunity for that within a community choice program. And people are talking about the electrification of transportation. But one thing I like to remind folks is that until we can clean up our source of electricity, electrification won't address climate change, right? If we're getting energy from a dirty source or from a faraway source, or through clean energy credits that is actually greenwashed energy. So we really make it a point to educate people that we do need to clean up our electrical grid and really make it truly clean energy. And with that, we are talking a lot about the electrification of public transportation and transportation, right? There's a lot of electrical cars now on the market, and that's only going to grow over time. So if we can clean up our source of electricity and make it truly clean, then when you do plug in your car, your electric car, or run your trains by electricity, then you know it's actually truly clean, not just locally, but on a larger scale than that. So that is really important to us, and it certainly is a benefit of community choice energy.
Jessica Tovar, I just want to congratulate you. It must be really feeling great, the position you're in now. Sort of in some ways, it's a culmination of a lot of work by a lot of people and a lot of struggle and organizing over many years. Really, California definitely leads the world and is so far ahead of Oregon, our clean and green state, so highly promoted as clean and green, basically run by the investor-owned utilities, but not California. Look, these are wonderful times. Congratulations, but keep up the good work. You know, the devil's in the details, of course.
Okay.
So make sure the details are good. I know that you folks know that, and you have the power to make sure it happens. You have the community behind you, I think, I hope.
We're definitely fighting for clean power to the people. That's what we like to say.
Well, that's a good line. Thanks a lot for talking to us today.
All right. Thank you so much.
Right. So long.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO during our membership drive. We thank you for listening to us any day, but we really love it now. And you've been listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm betting that most of you have turned on to this on purpose because you love this magazine show that has so many great members of the collective who bring you great interviews, like Bill was just doing with Jessica Tover. And today, in particular, if you become a member, you can get a great book. The number is 877-500-5266. We have a $700 goal for this hour, and you have been calling in. And so, you know, we appreciate that, but we need to make that goal, so we'd ask you to call right now. I'm suggesting $10 a month. That's $120 an hour. $120 an hour. That's $120 a year. And will make a huge difference for KBOO. You know, you can get the book today, Energy Democracy, Advancing Equity and Clean Energy Solutions. Really what they've been talking about is ways that we can take back our power, literally our electric power, our power, even under this kind of administration and in these kinds of circumstances. People can still take back power and begin to forge a cleaner energy future, and not just for those who can afford it, but for the people, and with a method that's from the people. And I think that's such an important message, and I think you think that's an important message and inspiring. So please use that inspiration to just whisk your phone open or push the buttons. 877-500-5266. You make a difference with your dollars every time your money comes into KBOO, and at $10 a month, it sustains us throughout the year rather than having to go fit from start. So once again, that number is 877-500-5266. I believe we have at least one phone still open. Please do call right now. We do need your dollars to make KBOO stay on the air. I wanted to let you know also that anyone who calls in today will be entered in a drawing. That's right. Anybody who calls in throughout this whole drive, every day we'll have a different prize drawing that you get entered into. So, in fact, they're over there right now writing up the entries for everyone who's been calling in, making sure that each one of them is entered. It's two subscriptions to the Literary Arts 2017-2018 five-part Portland Arts and Lecture Series at Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. And you will be entered into that no matter what your pledge level and no matter what you're calling for. Anyone who calls today, calls 877-500-5266, will be entered into that prize. So that's another wonderful benefit. You know, we're trying to do the ways that we think can help entice you, induce you if you're a little reluctant, or maybe just really please you that you're getting something. Like, if I won that drawing, I'd be so excited. Because I could ask my good friend Carol to go with me, and we would get to go to that together. You know, so we at KBOO are really doing our best to attract you, and we hope it's mostly our programming, our philosophy, and our mission that drives you. It's 877-500-5266. Your dollars make a difference when you give them to KBOO. They make a difference to the whole community, and as we've seen more and more when you hear our thank yous, you make a difference to a much wider community, because KBOO is absolutely into the internet era. I want to mention that you can, you know, get the KBOO app for your phone so that you can listen when you're not at home and not near a computer. I actually did that when I walked my dog this morning. I was listening to Democracy Now! What an easy thing. And we developed that app just so that you can stay part of the KBOO community. The number to call to make a difference with your dollars right now is 877-500-5266. Let me say it again, 877-500-5266. You can also do it on the internet. If you're listening on the internet, you know this because you can see the red rectangle up at the top of the page that says donate. But if you haven't gone to our webpage yet and you want to check it out, it's an easy way to become a member. It's kboo.fm right there on the front of the page. It will say donate, and you click that button and on you go. It only takes a few minutes. I tried it one time to pledge just so I could know that I was telling you the truth. I'm suggesting that you pledge at the $10 a month level. That's $120 a year, and that's a great level to become a member at. You can definitely get this book, Energy Democracy, Advancing Equity and Clean Energy Solutions, if you do that. And with just a $40 contribution, you can get that book as well. So I want to let you know that that book is available at the basic membership level. Many of you, that's the level that you want to become a member at. It's less than $5 a month when you do that. Please call us right now at 877-500-5266. And now we'll go back to this morning's programming with Old Mole Variety Hour.
Thanks, Linda. Next on the Old Mole, Mole Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker discuss immigration, the sanctuary movement, and the Trump administration trying to destroy that movement. Jan and Mike.
Well, Attorney General Jeffrey Sessions visited the Rose City last week, another whistle stop in his national crusade against immigrants and sanctuary cities. Sessions spoke to a group of federal prosecutors and immigration agents as activists demonstrated outside the Portland field offices of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration. Well, Mike, tell us about the significance of the Sessions visit, and how does this crackdown on immigrants through the Department of Justice resonate with local policing? How does the rubber meet the road here?
Well, Sessions is our preeminent fearmonger right now. He's trying to rustle up a crime wave at his talk about Portland's murder rate and about how since the 80s, people have been, like him, have been doing the hard work of busting criminals, but now crime has returned. He uses, as he usually does, absolute deception and outright lies about his statistics. For example, he said the Portland murder rate has gone up by 140% between 2013 and 2015. Had he noted 2016, he would have noted that the murder rate dropped from 34 to 20, or more than a third. He cherry-picked carefully among tiny numbers where two or three murders will make or break a statistical change. He then exoriated Portland for being a sanctuary city and said that it was critical to cooperate with federal law enforcement officials, with ICE, or Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But there is a law in effect in Portland and in Multnomah County, and has been since 2014, that forbids any local law enforcement official from turning over anybody to ICE unless there's probable cause. It's a U.S. Constitution Fourth Amendment guarantee. He is essentially asking sheriffs and police chiefs to violate a federal order.
So there's some contention about what law and order means, in a sense.
Well, that's right. His bias is consistently toward bigger and bigger government and more resources and authority delegated to bigger government.
But a bigger government that's heavy on the military and policing functions of the state.
Exactly. But he has very little power in the area of normal crime and punishment. He's got immense power in the area of immigration law.
So could you say a little about the resistance of sheriffs and law enforcement agencies to this massive display of power that ICE represents, and how that does resonate with local policing?
Well, police all over the country are very reluctant to do what Sessions would have them do, because they are charged with enforcing the law every day. They go into every part of every community on a daily basis to deal with panicky calls and all the problems that ensue from law enforcement. And they're afraid that if they make arbitrary detentions for reasons they're not at all clear, simply because they've been dictated to by a federal law enforcement agency, that will seriously contaminate their relationship with big swaths of the communities that they're in charge with enforcing the law. So they don't like it.
But during the Obama administration, Obama rolled out this whole Safe Communities program that set much of this in motion around working hand in glove between policing and the FBI and ICE databases, that police would cooperate in those kinds of raids.
Well, it's always been an uneasy relationship between local law enforcement and the feds, sometimes close, sometimes very distant. But this round of enforcement is not going well for Sessions because he has little power. For example, in Chicago, he tried to punish Chicago for being a sanctuary city. But what was at stake was $1.5 million, because there are some federal grants to cities and counties around the country, but they're really tiny, a very small proportion of any law enforcement budget or any criminal justice budget. So Sessions lost that anyway, because the judge said the city had a high likelihood of succeeding in saying that he cannot condition the award of grants on complying with enforcement of principles and laws that are very dubious. ICE is actually requesting local cops to turn over people to them without providing reasons for doing that.
Now, one of the dilemmas at the local levels, the limits also of the sanctuary city movement and what it means to have a sanctuary city. Some people don't like that term because instead prefer terms like safe, because there is no ultimate sanctuary. So one can downplay the power of ICE as well, and particularly now in the fate of many of these so-called dreamers. What about that, those limits? Because you're saying they don't have a lot of power, but at another level they do. Once ICE picks you up, they have enormous power at their disposal to determine the fate of people they do arrest.
Well, that's true. Once they've got you, they can incarcerate you indefinitely anywhere they want in the country. So the immigration law aspect of what Sessions is doing, he's got terrific power. The DACA, or the deferred children who came here at the age of 12 months, you know, he was their point man for saying that the program to extend citizenship, aspects of citizenship to these dreamers, is going to be canceled. Because nobody else wanted to say it, because all the rhetoric from the Trump administration about dangerous immigrants,
they're murderers and rapists, and here and this people, doesn't fit with the dreamers, don't fit with the narrative.
No, they don't at all. I mean, when you come here, it's hard to say that somebody who comes here when they're 12 months old is going to be a menace to society.
But that also has been problematic throughout the narrative of the dreamers, because it relies very heavily on this idea that you shouldn't suffer the sins of your parents, that these are children who come here through no fault of their own. They're aspiring to fulfill the American dream. It's a kind of conservative narrative, and it sets aside the situation of their parents who chose to come here under various constraints. So there's also the issue of what draws adults here, and the hypocrisy of the administration, the ruling class in this country.
Well, of course. I mean, there is not only a pull, but there's also a huge push because of our policies in places like Honduras, where we summarily dismissed a duly elected president. We've got horrific policies up and down Central America that have led to people fleeing for their lives. And there are people with asylum applications up and down the border who are absolutely frozen right now. So that's true. The best thing about DACA, I think, is it doesn't pretend to be a comprehensive analysis of the situation with the Trump administration, but it just absolutely undercuts their whole rationale. It is fundamentally
racist. The demonizing
racist.
Of right. Particularly brown people.
Yeah. There's no actus reus or mens rea or criminal activity whatsoever in these people. So the only conceivable justification is that they are, it is race.
And I think also the to me, what's been important is this this emphasis on how integrated immigrants, including people who are here without papers, are in the economy and the culture and the communities in the U.S.
Well, we would not be, I mean, it's a truism, but that doesn't make it any less true, that we would not be what we are without immigrants. A steady flow of immigrants has always been essential and a fundamental uh-huh. driving force behind the development of every part of this country.
And that's why the ruling class or the ruling powers are often very divided around immigration policies, not only around policing, but on other kind of fault lines. And so that's something maybe to take up as we continue to follow this issue?
Well, there are huge splits between big business people who have always relied on immigrants and black people as to lower the wages and to increase the labor pool versus people with a more socially conservative view or a more race-based view. That's like the big split on the issue of civil forfeitures, where Jeff Sessions is a complete government man who wants to be able to seize money even when there's no charge from anybody who's ever arrested, and versus the libertarian right who are appalled by it. So there are fractures here and there that we can and should take advantage of.
Yeah. This is Jan Hawken and Mike Snedeker talking today about Attorney General Jeff Sessions' recent visit to the Rose City and his unwelcome responses here.
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Mike and Jan. This, of course, report was on immigration. KABU covers the whole spectrum of the political struggles in the United States around inequality, around the American gulag, around climate change, around housing, and the gentrification of cities at the huge expense of ordinary people.
Well, and you know, Bill, it's not just that KABU covers those, it's that you guys cover that on Old Mole Variety Hour. It's one of the things I really appreciate about your show, and I'm sure the audience out there appreciates. That's why they're listening in. You get several segments of important and in-depth information, and cultural information, cultural discussions, political discussions, feminist discussions, all so important, and lots about the rising activism and bringing local activists here to be on. So if you love that programming, and I think you do, it's 877-500-5266. So far for this show, we've had Joanna, a renewing member from Portland, Keith, a renewing member from Portland, Clayton, a renewing member from Portland, and Jennifer from Scappoose, also a renewing member. I'd love to hear more of you outlying areas, people who live in outlying areas and sometimes feel a little bit isolated in Oregon. I grew up in small towns in Oregon and love getting to tune in to KBOO. I'd love to hear from you, and we call you out a thank you to you, and your town gets mentioned as well. The number to call right now is 877-500-5266. You know, I often think on a Monday morning that I'm going to finish up listening to the talk show, Cecil and Celeste, and then I'm going to run out for a run or go out and take my dog. And then I realize, oh no, that's Old Mole Variety Hour on, then I'm not going to go anywhere then. So I often stay home and do my dishes or other housework just to continue listening to Old Mole Variety Hour. I think there's probably others of you out there who do that as well. You really tune in on this day for this programming. I'm suggesting that you show your support. You don't have to, but you sure get to, and it makes a difference with your dollars. It's how this radio gets on the air, is all of the member contribution. Call us right now at 877-500-5266 or go to kbo.fm. If you haven't pulled up your computer this morning, it's really easy to become a member that way. It's kboo.fm. Push on donate. And once again, the number to call, we're going to go back to programming, but don't let that hold you back. We've got phone answers here ready to answer right now. 877-500-5266. Let's hear from Spokane. Let's hear from Hood River, who's been through so much. Let's hear from all of you and call us right now, 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Linda. Coming up on KABU. This is your Old Mole Variety Hour on KABU. Coming up this morning at 10, pretty soon, it's Locus Focus. Barbara Bernstein talks to toxicologist Emily Munson, who wrote the book Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. It's Making Contact at 11, leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court hearing on Trump's travel ban. We'll hear about the impact on people from effective Muslim-majority countries and how advocacy groups like the Council on Islamic Relations are responding. At 11:30, it's Voices for the Animals talks to local animal rights activist Dana Ruckin about her direct actions all over the city and anywhere else she finds any animals being exploited. That's all on KABU. There are so many interesting struggles by, in fact, the majority of the people. The conservatives own the state and economy, and they're related. But, in fact, the people are really very different. That is, the great majority of Americans reject a lot of the policies that they're being offered and they're being done in their name. Next on the old mold, Denise Morris. She talks about the Buy America campaign and is it good for working class people.
Like Right to Work, Buy American has a pretty good ring to it. Both sound like programs that ensure the working class will benefit and thrive. In fact, many in union leadership believe broadening Buy American regulations is the path to prosperity and understand it to be a patriotic fair trade value. Quote, "The Buy American and Hire American executive order could help jumpstart an investment in domestic production that would employ U.S. workers and boost the economy at the same time. It outlines federal procurement policies that focus on utilizing goods, products, and materials made in this country. Most importantly, it directs federal agencies to reduce the use of waivers and exemptions that have allowed them to bypass Buy American laws up until now." This is from a June 2017 Huffington Post editorial co-signed by union presidents representing Teamsters, auto workers, and machinists, and aerospace workers. It was this past April 2017 when Trump signed his executive order to Buy American and Hire American. Reporters from New Yorker and Forbes magazine called the executive order puzzling and a lot of smoke and mirrors. At the same time, union leadership said, quote, "We hope the administration and the Congress will work together to strengthen Buy American laws and regulations." Fast forward to August 2017, and we see AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka quit Donald Trump's business council, not because he questioned the value of Buy American, but because, quote, "It has become clear that President Trump has no intention of following through on his commitments to working people. More worrisome, his actions and rhetoric threaten to leave America worse off and more divided. It is for these reasons that I resigned yesterday from the President's Manufacturing Council." And in fact, the council was disbanded after a string of resignations. Is Buy American good for the working class in the U.S.? Chris Brooks, writing for Labor Notes, interviewed Dana Frank, history professor at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and author of Buy American, The Untold Story of Economic Nationalism, about the history and impact of these campaigns. Responding to Trump's recent executive order and its likely impact, Dana Frank explains, "You can see Trump here playing the anti-immigrant card, trying to turn working people in the U.S. against immigrants so we won't point the finger at plutocrats like Trump and his cabinet. The nationalism of his slogans play right into this as he tries to split the U.S. working class. Buy American campaigns operate on the assumption that if you buy a product made in the United States, then the company making the profit off that sale is going to reinvest in good union jobs in the United States. But that is very rarely the case. The companies didn't agree to that partnership. They have instead used these profits to lobby for free trade agreements that grease the skids for them to go overseas. People who might think they can separate out some sort of progressive version of Buy American will ultimately be unable to escape its sliding into Hire American or American First, and the notion that the United States shouldn't be concerned with the struggles of working class people in other countries. Buy American campaigns became popular in the late 1970s as working people were trying to address capital flight and employers began turning on unions demanding concessions. Again, these campaigns had a very strong racist component. People thrashed Japanese cars, even ones that were made by union workers in Japan, and Japanese cars made in the United States with union labor. This wasn't just the auto workers, but many manufacturing unions. The garment workers launched an anti-Asian Buy American campaign, but had to back away from it due to pressure from Asian American activists. Like people in the 1970s, people today want to return to the so-called golden age when there were lots of jobs in heavy industry that were union, paid really well, and provided excellent benefits. They imagine that Buy American might help to bring all that back. The problem is that employers have long since turned on the labor movement and driven down working conditions so far that it is very hard to return to that world. The strategy being pursued by employers today is totally different from what unions faced in the 1950s and 60s when steelworkers and auto workers had these great jobs. I find it tragic that the U.S. labor movement would follow Trump into his trap. Already some labor leaders are saying, yes, let's build the Keystone XL pipeline using union products made in the USA. And then, of course, Trump exempted the Keystone pipeline from his own Buy American pledge. Elite support for Buy American campaigns has almost always contained that kind of hypocrisy. We do have to figure out what alternative progressive trade policies look like. We need to be talking about a third path that puts labor rights and union protections first as part of a broader package that also addresses immigration, committed to raising working people's wages and working conditions all over the world. And as our very own old mole Bill Resnick observes, quote, the establishment media poses the trade struggle as between those who favor free trade as opposed to those who favor protectionism, and neglect to point out there is a third option, fair trade, where, unlike free trade's many rules and regulations that protect and enhance the power of multinational capital, fair trade protects workers and the environment in every country. I've been reading selections from Chris Brooks' interview with Dana Frank last May 2017. You can find the full interview and a link to her book, Buy American, The Untold Story of Economic Nationalism, at labornotes.org. I am Denise Morris for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Well, thank you, Denise. Thanks for quoting me, in fact. Anyway, this is the second Monday, in fact, the last Monday of KABU's fall membership drive. If you listen to KABU, if you want to keep us on the air, please call, become a member, renew, donate. Show your appreciation and support for the programs that so enrich your life, that bring you the most interesting and thoughtful people on this planet, that remind you that you are not alone, that there are so many who love and support the values that you want to live by. We want you to call. We need you to call and become a member and come down here to meet us and get active in our wonderful community. Linda, you're really good at talking about KABU. Tell us.
That's because I love to talk and I love KABU. So when we put them together, I talk a lot about KABU. But right now, what I'd like to tell you is that you can become a member of this great station really easily. You just pick up your phone and dial us at 877-500-5266. You've been calling in all morning, and we really appreciate that. You make the difference with your dollars. You know, the goal that we're about on track for our dollars, maybe a little, right on track for our dollars for the whole drive, and that makes such a difference. That helps fuel this engine for the rest of the year. You make such a difference. So take a moment right now. Call us at 877-500-5266 or go to our website at kboo.fm. If you've never been there, go anyway, because you can find all the great stuff we have there. Or if you're out and about, maybe you're listening on your radio app. On your phone app. I have a smartphone, just a Samsung, and I got the KABU app. You can go to KABU's homepage and find the directions to lead you that direction, and download that app, and you can listen to KBOO anywhere you go. It's really nice. I carry it in my pocket, literally, and listen to KBOO when there are shows on that I can't get otherwise. But, you know, I don't listen to any of the regular radio stations that way. I'm not trying to make sure I get to hear that story or that show, or I'm excited about some issue coming on. I don't listen to radio, regular radio that way, and I bet most of you don't either. You don't care if you miss a song. You don't care if you, you know, miss a commercial, certainly. But you do care if you miss one of KBOO's shows. You want to hear it. You got excited about the issue. It's 877-500-5266. Now, I'm suggesting $10 a month. A lot of you are doing that. That's $120 a year. You know, you can have it come out of your credit card, your debit card, your checking account, any of those ways. It's really easy to sign up to do, and it keeps this radio station going on, you know, day in and day out. We have to have those lights on. We have to have the mics on. We have to have all of the setup for all of us volunteers here, because we want to make sure you know that everybody on the air that you've been hearing is a volunteer here at KBOO. But the way that volunteers can get on the radio is that there's a station there. It's KBOO. We're the longest running independent radio station in the nation. The number to call to become part of this station and become part of making a difference with your dollars right here is 877-500-5266. I'm sorry, you probably didn't hear that. I heard something over my headphones that made me jump, but woo is the right thing to do. Anyway, because this is a morning for you to get excited about radio, to be happy that you live in Portland and you get KBOO and that it's part of your community. It's not, you know, now the whole world can get us, but who's generating it? You are. That's right. You and your friends as volunteers and the organizations that you belong to are empowered by this station and by membership in this station. So take a moment right now. $10 a month is a great amount to give. Yeah, the number to call is 877-500-5266. Let me say that again really slowly. 877-500-5266. Make a difference with your dollars. And by the way, get this great book, Energy Democracy, Advancing Equity in Clean Energy Solutions. You know, this book, Naomi Klein had something to say about it. She said, as we transition off of fossil fuels, we have a once-in-a-century opportunity to build a fair and democratic economy that works for everyone. In this marvelous collection, you'll hear directly from many of the inspiring leaders who've been theorizing, organizing, and laying the policy groundwork for a leap forward. I know you care about energy issues. You're part of the KBOO community. You've turned on this station. Take a moment to show that support. Join KBOO. Become part of a larger movement, the movement that tells you about all of the other movements. That's KBOO.fm. You can become a member there. But 877-500-5266 is the number to call. And by the way, any one of you who calls today at any level, you'll be entered in a drawing. Two subscriptions to the Literary Arts 2017-2018 five-part Portland Arts and Lecture Series at the Arlene Snitzer Concert Hall. That's a lot of words, but it means you could get two tickets to the Literary Arts Concert, a Literary Arts Series coming up. That's a great thing to just get entered in. So you get entered into that contest no matter what level you pledge when you call in today, or prize, we call it. Now we're going to go right back to programming. I believe that we are going to Barbara Bernstein and Locus Focus.
Hi, folks. Well, we still have a few minutes here, and I want to urge you to call. We'll sign off really soon. Let me say we also have, I want to remind you, a book by an Old Mole Collective member, Clayton Morgerich. It's a wonderful book. He's just published it a couple months ago. It's called Demystifying Demons, Rethinking Who and What We Are, and it's a way of seeing people's troubles in a very different light and giving people some sense of how do we deal with the demons that have haunted us. There's very few of us who are free of all of the inhibitions and troubles and anxieties that most humans have to experience and deal with and surmount. And Clayton's book really talks about how we're social beings, how these demons developed, and how they can be dealt with. And we still have that book available as a premium, along with Energy Democracy. We still have time to, in fact, respond. 877-500-5266. I'm going to sign off now, but you can keep calling, and we hope you do. First, I want to give thanks to the people who called, a number of them. I think Linda's mentioned all their names. It's terrific. Thank you. I also want to thank the people who have done the show, particularly Jessica Tovar, who's a wonderful organizer in California. And I am being asked to conclude. So let me say this and thank our ace engineer, wonderful engineer, Patricia. You can hear this show or any part of it again or any of our previous shows or recommend this for friends. Just tell them to go to the web to KABU and on top right the search box and type Old Mole and you get it. Join us again next week for more news, views, reviews, interviews from the Mole's underground working class perspective. I'm Bill Resnick, your host today, signing off. One final thing, if you haven't done it yet, okay, you can still call. Those phones are being answered by wonderful people. It's never too late to reach out. Thank you.
KBOO Portland.
KABU would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunch Box, located 620 Southwest 9th Avenue in Portland, a small casual spot for counter-served breakfast, burgers, and sandwiches in a cafe environment. Lunch was provided by Musubi, located 2134 Southeast Division Street, Portland's takeout spot for Hawaiian sushi rice snacks filled with house-made spam and other delicacies. Dinner was provided by Mississippi Pizza, located 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. Music, trivia, and other all-ages events are featured at this pizzeria with lounge. For more information on how you can support KABU, call 877-500-5555.